Patriot Correspondence Number 2.
Dan, who's your favorite founding father and why?
The answer to your question, Mr. Corcoran, is Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams was born in Boston in the British colony of Massachusetts in 1722. He was a leader of the American Revolution in colonial Massachusetts, second cousin to his first fellow founding father, President John Adams, and an architect of American republicanism. Adams was one of the first colonial leaders to argue that mankind possessed certain natural rights that government could not violate. Adams' life was greatly affected by his father's involvement in a banking controversy. In 1739, Massachusetts was facing a serious currency shortage. Adams' father helped create a land bank. The bank issued paper money to borrowers who mortgaged their land as security. It was generally supported by the people. Opposition to it came from aristocratic followers of the royal governor. They used their influence to have the British Parliament dissolve the land bank in 1741. Bank directors, including Adams' father, became personally liable for the currency still in circulation. Lawsuits over the bank persisted for years, even after Adams Sr.'s death. The younger Adams often had to defend the family estate from seizure by the government. For Adams, these lawsuits served as a constant personal reminder that Britain's arbitrary power over the colonies could be exercised in destructive ways. Samuel Adams was elected to his first political office in 1747, serving as one of the clerks of the Boston market. In 48, the colonies were inflamed by British impressment. Impressment was the practice of abducting American merchant sailors into British naval service. Impressment caused Adams to launch a weekly newspaper. His political essays drew heavily upon English political theorist John Locke's Second Treatise of Government, written 60 years earlier. In the Second Treatise, Locke explained the rise of property and civilization, realizing the only legitimate government is one that has the consent of the people. Therefore, any government that rules without the consent of the people can be overthrown. Adams also wrote about the decline of the Roman Empire as an example of what could happen to New England if it were to abandon its Puritan values. Adams emerged as an important public figure in Boston soon after the British Empire's victory in the French and Indian War in 1763. The British Parliament was deep in debt. So for the first time, they sought to collect taxes on the colonies directly. The first tax was imposed under the Sugar Act of 1764. Adams saw it as an infringement on long-standing colonial rights. Colonists were not represented in Parliament, he argued, and therefore could not be taxed by that body. The colonists were represented by the colonial assemblies, and only they could levy taxes on Americans. Adams wrote of the dangers of taxation without representation. For if our trade may be taxed, why not our lands? Why not the produce of our lands and everything we possess or make use of? This, we apprehend, annihilates our charter right to govern and tax ourselves. It strikes at our British privileges, which, as we have never forfeited them, we hold in common with our fellow subjects, who are natives of Britain. If taxes are laid upon us in any shape without our having a legal representation where they are laid, are we not reduced from the character of free subjects to the miserable state of tributary slaves? In response to the Sugar Act, Adams led the Boston Town Meeting to become the first political body in America to go on record stating Parliament could not constitutionally tax the colonists. It was also the first call for the colonies to present a unified defense of their rights. Adams was well ahead of other founding fathers in 1774 by claiming Parliament did not have sovereignty over the colonies. In 1765, Parliament passed the Stamp Act. It required colonists to pay a new tax on most printed materials. While Adams supported calls for a boycott of British goods to pressure Parliament to repeal the tax, the Stamp Act produced an uproar in the colonies. The Stamp Act riots saw a stamp distributor hanged in effigy from Boston's Liberty Tree, his home ransacked, and his office demolished. The Lieutenant Governor's home was also destroyed by an angry crowd. The British governor of Massachusetts believed common people acted only under the direction of agitators. He blamed the violence on Adams. In 1776, Adams was re-elected to the Massachusetts House. Joining Adams for the first time was John Hancock, a new representative from Boston. Hancock was a wealthy merchant, perhaps the richest man in Massachusetts, but a relative newcomer to politics. He was a protege of Adams, using his wealth to promote the cause. In 1767, Parliament repealed the Stamp Act, but soon passed the Townshend Acts. They established new import taxes. Those taxes were relatively low because British wanted to establish a precedent that Parliament had the power to impose tariffs on the colonies before raising them. Revenues were to be used to pay for governors and judges who would be independent of colonial control. Adams organized an economic boycott. In 1768, the Massachusetts House attempted to send a petition against the acts to the king. London soon instructed their colonial governors to dissolve colonial assemblies if they joined Massachusetts in petitioning the king. It also directed the Massachusetts governor to force the Massachusetts House to rescind the petition. The House refused, with Adams citing their right to petition. Far from complying with the governor's order, Adams instead presented a new petition to the king, asking the governor be removed from office. The governor responded by dissolving the legislature. The British soon discovered they were unable to enforce their taxes in Boston. Massachusetts was placed under martial law. Two regiments occupied Boston in October 68, followed by two more in November. This was a turning point for Adams. He was transformed from a reformer to a revolutionary. Tensions between soldiers and civilians eventually resulted in the Boston Massacre of March 1770. Adams wanted the soldiers to have a fair trial. This would show that Boston was not controlled by a lawless mob, but instead the victim of unjust occupation. He convinced his cousins John Adams and Josiah Quincy to defend the soldiers. In April 1770, Parliament repealed the Townshend taxes except for the one on tea. Adams urged colonists to keep up the boycott of British goods. He argued that paying even one small tax allowed Parliament to set the precedent of taxing the colonies. The boycott faltered. As economic conditions improved, support diminished for Adams' cause. First New York City, then Philadelphia, abandoned the boycott on British goods. Facing economic ruin, Boston merchants ended their boycott too. Adams' political standing weakened as a result. But in 1772, Massachusetts learned that its governor, lieutenant governor, and Superior Court judges were now paid by the British government rather by the colony. In protest, Adams devised a system of committees of correspondence. Towns in Massachusetts would consult with each other via messages sent through a network that recorded British activities and protested imperial policies. Committees of correspondence soon formed in the colonies. The royal governor of Massachusetts realized the committees of correspondence were growing into an independence movement. In 1773, he addressed the legislature. He warned the Americans that denying the supremacy of Parliament came dangerously close to rebellion. Adams and the House responded that the Massachusetts Charter did not establish Parliament's supremacy over the province, and so Parliament could not claim that authority now. In May 73, Parliament passed the Tea Act. It was a tax meant to help the struggling East India Company, Britain's global state-sanctioned monopolistic corporation. Britons could buy smuggled Dutch tea much more cheaply than the East India Company could import it because of heavy taxes imposed on their tea. So East India amassed a huge surplus of tea that it could not sell. The British government's solution to the problem was to sell the surplus in the colonies. The Tea Act permitted the East India Company to export tea directly to the colonies for the first time. This measure was a threat to the American colonial economy. It granted the East India Company a significant cost advantage, driving American tea merchants out of business. In late 73, 7 ships were sent to the colonies carrying East India Company tea. 4 were bound for Boston. News of the Tea Act set off a firestorm of protests in the colonies. With the tea shipments about to arrive, Adams rallied the Committee of Correspondents. The tea ship Dartmouth arrived in Boston Harbor in late November. Adams organized a mass meeting. Thousands attended. British law required the Dartmouth to unload and pay taxes within 20 days, or customs officials could confiscate the cargo. The mass meeting passed a resolution introduced by Adams, urging the captain of the Dartmouth to send the ship back without paying the import tax. Meanwhile, the meeting assigned 25 men to watch the ship and prevent the tea from being unloaded. The British governor refused to grant permission to the Dartmouth to leave without paying the tax. 2 more tea ships arrived in Boston Harbor. December 16th was the last day of the Dartmouth's deadline. 7,000 people gathered around the Old South Meeting House. Adams received a report that the British governor continued to refuse to let the ships leave. So Adams announced, "This meeting can do no further to save the country." Some say Adams' statement was a prearranged signal for the Tea Party to begin. Others say he tried to stop people from leaving because the meeting was not over yet. In any event, people poured out of the South Meeting House and headed to Boston Harbor. Within hours, a dozen men or more, disguised as Mohawk Indians, boarded 3 vessels. They dumped all 342 chests of tea into the water. Adams never revealed whether he went to the wharf to witness the destruction of the tea. Whether or not he helped plan the event is unknown. But Adams immediately worked to publicize and defend it. He argued it was not an act of a lawless mob, but instead a principled protest and the only remaining option of a people who had to defend their constitutional rights. Britain responded to the Boston Tea Party with the Coercive Acts. The first of these acts was the Boston Port Act. It closed Boston's commerce until the East India Company had been repaid. The Massachusetts Governor Act rewrote the Massachusetts Charter. It made many officials royally appointed rather than elected and severely restricted town meetings. The Administration of Justice Act allowed colonists charged with crimes to be extradited to Britain for trial. A new royal governor was appointed to enforce the acts, General Thomas Gage. Gage was also commander of British military forces in North America. Adams worked to coordinate resistance to the Coercive Acts. He was one of 5 delegates chosen to attend the First Continental Congress from Massachusetts. Adams was never fashionably dressed and had little money, so friends bought him new clothes and paid his expenses for the journey to Philadelphia. It was his first trip outside of Massachusetts. In Philadelphia, Adams promoted colonial unity and organized a continental boycott. He returned to Massachusetts in November 1774, serving in the Massachusetts Provincial Congress. This was an underground legislative body independent of British control. The Provincial Congress created the first Minutemen companies. Adams was then selected to attend the second Continental Congress, scheduled to meet in Philadelphia in May of 75. Hancock had been added to the delegation. He and Adams attended the Provincial Congress in Concord, Massachusetts, before their journey to the Second Congress. The two men decided it was not safe to return to Boston before leaving for Philadelphia, so they stayed at Hancock's childhood home in Lexington. On April 14, 1775, General Gage was ordered to arrest the principal actors in the Provincial Congress for treason and rebellion. On the night of April 18th, Gage sent out a detachment of soldiers on the infamous armed seizures raid. It sparked the American Revolutionary War. The mission was to confiscate and destroy military supplies the colonists had stored in Concord. Gage also instructed his men to arrest Hancock and Adams. London newspapers that had recently arrived in Boston claimed Adams would be hanged if he were caught. From Boston, Joseph Warren dispatched Paul Revere to warn that the Redcoats were on the move and might attempt to arrest them. Hancock and Adams made their escape. and the first shots of the war began at Lexington and Concord. Soon after the battle, Gage issued a proclamation granting a general pardon to all who would lay down their arms and return to the duties of peaceable subjects, with the exceptions of Hancock and Adams. Singling out Hancock and Adams in this manner added to their renown among patriots. The Second Continental Congress worked under a secrecy rule, so Adams' precise role is not fully documented. He appears to have had a major influence, working behind the scenes as a sort of parliamentary whip. Thomas Jefferson credits Adams with steering the Congress towards independence. He served on numerous committees, often dealing with military matters. Adams nominated George Washington to be the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. Congress approved the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776, which Adams signed. He then served on military committees, including the Board of War established in 1777. He advocated bonuses to Continental Army soldiers to encourage them to reenlist for the war's duration. He called for harsh state legislature to punish loyalists. Adams believed Tories were as dangerous to American liberty as British soldiers. In Massachusetts, more than 300 loyalists were banished and the property confiscated. After the war, Adams opposed allowing loyalists to return to Massachusetts. He expected they would work to undermine the Republican government. Adams was Massachusetts delegate appointed to the committee to draft the Articles of Confederation. He signed it with the other Massachusetts delegates in 1778. He returned to Boston in 79 to attend the state's Constitutional Convention. He, his cousin John Adams, and James Bowdoin drafted the Massachusetts Constitution. It established a Republican form of government with separation of powers and annual elections. It reflected Adams' belief that a state is never free except when each citizen is bound by no law, whatever, that he has not approved of, either directly or through his representatives. In 1781, Adams retired from the Continental Congress. He returned to Boston and never left Massachusetts again. Raised a devout Puritan, Adams focused his political agenda on promoting virtue. He considered virtue essential to a Republican government. If Republican leaders lacked virtue, he believed, liberty was endangered. In 1786, post-war economic troubles in western Massachusetts led to Shays Rebellion. Small farmers, angered by high taxes and debts, armed themselves and shut down debtor courts. The governor sent 4,000 militiamen to put down the uprising, an action supported by Adams. Some of his old political allies thought Adams had forsaken his principles, but Adams saw no contradiction. He approved of rebellion against an unrepresentative government, but he opposed taking up arms against a Republican government where problems could be remedied through elections. He thought the leaders of Shays' Rebellion should be hanged, reportedly saying, "The man who dares rebel against the laws of a republic ought to suffer death." Shays' Rebellion contributed to the belief that the Articles of Confederation needed to be revised. In 1787, delegates of the Philadelphia Convention created a new U.S. Constitution with a much stronger national government. The Constitution was sent to the states for ratification. Adams expressed his displeasure. He was labeled anti-federalist by proponents of the new Constitution, who called themselves Federalists. Adams made an attempt to re-enter national politics. He ran for the House of Representatives in 1788, but he lost to a strong supporter of the Constitution. It was a more popular position at the time. Despite his defeat, Adams continued to work for amendments to the Constitution. In 1790, Adams was elected governor of Massachusetts. His movement ultimately resulted in the Bill of Rights in 1791. Adams subsequently became a firm supporter of the Constitution. He supported the suppression of the Whiskey Rebellion in 1794 for the same reasons he had opposed Shays' Rebellion. Adams took a cue from President Washington, who declined to run for re-election in 1796. Adams retired from politics at the end of his term as governor in 1797. He died 5 years later at the age of 81 in 1803. Boston's Republican newspaper, the Independent Chronicle, eulogized him as, quote, "the father of the American Revolution." Thomas Jefferson characterized Adams as truly the man of the Revolution. In sum, this is one of our greatest patriots of this nation has ever seen. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned. Lots of issues we discuss at the Patriot Power Hour on a week-in and week-out basis, Mr. Cochran. There's your answer to your question. Who is my favorite founding father and why?